Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The St. Louis City government is taking on a problem that's an increasing health concern. That's obesity. What can government do about that? We'll talk about it a little bit later. We'll also chat with Senator Claire McCaskill about her concerns in the weight loss world. But first, another health issue. A relatively rare disease is common enough that millions of women around the world suffer from it and its consequences. Those consequences can include infertility, heart disease, diabetes, and other major health problems. It's called polycystic ovarian syndrome, or PCOS. Here to talk about what it is and what to do about it are, from Washington University School of Medicine, Dr. Valerie Ratz, professor of obstetrics and gynecology. She was recently named dean of admissions for WashU's medical school. Dr. Emily Jungheim is assistant professor of obstetrics and gynecology. A little bit later, we'll be talking with Randa Herman. She has PCOS and is a patient of Dr. Ratz. She will be joining us by phone. Doctors, very nice to have you here. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Dr. Ratz, let me begin with you. What is PCOS? Who gets it?
So PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, it is a syndrome that affects the reproductive age woman, and it can start as early as adolescence, and it extends until the premenopausal age period. And it typically is a syndrome that we characterize as having irregular menstrual periods and evidence of elevated androgen levels. And when you say elevated androgen levels, I mean symptoms that go with that include things like acne, oily skin, increased hair growth in areas that women don't like, on the face and abdomen.
From what I understand, the symptoms are never really the same in everyone. They vary.
That's absolutely correct. It's a syndrome. And so when you say syndrome, there are a variety of symptoms that patients will have, and doctors put those symptoms together to make the diagnosis.
Is there a profile, Dr. Jungheim, of a typical patient?
Well, as Valerie said, it's really kind of a heterogeneous population of women. But if you ask a medical student who comes to our office, they'll typically say it's someone who's not having periods, bad acne. Oftentimes you can see it in obesity, but that's not always the case. There is a lot of heterogeneity, as Valerie said.
Yeah, I was thinking in terms of racial or ethnic.
Not at all.
It covers
everybody.
Grounds.
Yep.
I spoke of this as a relatively rare disease. Is that an accurate characterization?
Certainly not in our world.
Yeah.
That's a big portion of what we see in our practice. We practice reproductive endocrinology and infertility. So we see a lot of women who are trying to conceive who are struggling with this, but a lot of women haven't necessarily presented or don't even know that they've got it until they're trying to conceive. But it is quite common in our world for sure.
Yeah, the studies would argue that 4 to 8% of women will have polycystic ovarian syndrome in this country or around the world. So it's actually a relatively common endocrine disease in women.
Do we know what causes it?
We don't know exactly what causes it, and that's been a big part of the problem. There appear to be various areas of the body that are affected. So we don't know where it starts. It's this chicken or the egg sort of picture. There are problems in the brain and how the brain signals the ovary. There are problems within the ovary in terms of how the ovary functions and what hormones it produces. And then there are other metabolic effects throughout the body. There's a connection with insulin resistance, which Emily has done a lot of work on in terms of research and looking at fat and nutrition, free fatty acids, and those sorts of things.
Infertility being the main problem with this, but there are others. I alluded to some very, very serious diseases. You've already mentioned diabetes, but there are others as well.
Certainly. I mean, the way I always see it, a lot of women who are young don't think about medical problems until they're trying to conceive. But really, women with PCOS should be thinking about prevention of long-term diseases, cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, serious diseases that strike these women more commonly. But young women aren't often thinking about. It's often not until they're trying to conceive that they present.
Are there other symptoms that are less dramatic than those that have been mentioned, a sudden weight gain or hair growth, that sort of thing?
Sometimes it's gradual. Sometimes it can be quicker on onset, particularly if it's related to weight. A lot of women don't pay attention to their menstrual cycles, but menstrual irregularities are probably the first and foremost sign that someone has this condition.
Once diagnosed, how do you deal with it?
Well, what I was going to mention is that I have a pediatric and adolescent gynecology practice, and so I actually see adolescents that present with PCOS, and where they're typically presenting is complaints of heavy periods, very irregular periods, problems, real problems with acne that don't respond to the normal measures that we use to treat those types of symptoms. And then the issues with weight gain. We know that there truly is a connection with weight gain, with insulin resistance, which goes along with the onset of PCOS. So to get to your question, how do we treat? What I always say, the way we treat PCOS depends on what the goal is. What is the goal for that individual patient? And so that will vary depending on is the patient bothered by their irregular periods? Is the patient bothered by the hair growth and acne issues? Is overall health the most important thing that they're looking at, worried about developing diabetes and long-term health issues? Or is it an issue of, yes, now I want to get pregnant, what do I need to do? So it depends on what is the goal.
Is infertility always an issue when someone has PCOS?
Well, not everybody wants to conceive, so not necessarily. But that's a great question. So PCOS, sometimes women won't experience menstrual irregularities, and that gets back to Valerie's point of the heterogeneity of the condition and how it's not always the same in every woman. Some women do continue to have regular cycles and just have elevated androgens and abnormal ovaries and ultrasound, but may still have menstrual cycles. So infertility is probably one of the most common complaints. But certainly if someone's not trying to conceive, we worry about the long-term complications of PCOS and certainly need to be thinking about preventing those things.
Just to be clear what we're talking about here, we're talking about cysts. Are cysts on the ovary? Is that exactly what is happening?
So I like to always say that the PCOS and the cysts on the ovary is somewhat of a misnomer, which I think is an important point that you're making in the sense that those cysts that have been used to make this diagnosis are small, little, fluid-filled areas that we can see on ultrasound. And they're actually very small. They're between 2 and 9 millimeters in size. So they're not what you would usually see when someone says, I have a cyst on my ovary. We're talking about something that's much larger. So the polycystic ovary syndrome is these little teeny areas of fluid that sort of rim the ovary. And what they really are eggs that started to grow and basically stopped growing. They became atretic or stalled out. And so they make these little fluid-filled areas that we can see throughout the ovary. And that is just a very characteristic appearance of the ovary that we see when we look at the ovary on ultrasound.
Any chance that they can be surgically removed?
No, well, they don't need to be. I mean, as Valerie said, they're really follicles containing eggs that have stalled out and not continue to grow. There has been, in the past, before we had better treatments for polycystic ovary syndrome, people would try to drill these cysts to improve ovulatory function. But really, we try to preserve ovarian function and integrity as much as possible in any reproductive age woman. So we wouldn't recommend something like that.
I'd like to bring into the conversation now Randa Herman, a patient of Dr. Ratz, as I understand it,
yes.
Doctor. And she's joining us by phone from Marion, Illinois. Randa, are you there?
Yes, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being with us. Could you bring us up to speed on your situation? If I may ask, how old you are and when you first discovered that you had PCOS?
I'm 25 right now, and I think that as soon as I got my period, it was late. I probably was 16 years old, and it was always weird, so I always knew something was wrong, but it wasn't until 2012 that they had diagnosed me with PCOS after doing a diagnostic surgery because I thought I might have endometriosis. But he just confirmed that and put me on metformin and went from there just trying. And that's how I got to Valerie Ratz, just trying to have a baby now and going that route.
What other symptoms did you notice? I mean, were you one who suffered from sudden weight gain or abnormal hair growth?
Absolutely. I have very coarse hair, and it's everywhere. And it always grows in places that women don't want it, on their face, their stomach, their arms, everywhere that women probably shave to get it off, that's where it is. And it's not fun to have that. But also acne and weight gain in my stomach, mostly. I always say that I have really small legs and a big stomach. That's just where the PCOS makes my weight fall, is in my stomach. So I'd say the hair growth is probably my biggest symptom as far as what I noticed in the early stages of it.
How do you deal with that?
Most times you just kind of have to shave it, wax it, bleach it, but it's kind of just there. You can't really do much for it because it just grows back, and it's definitely hard, and the weight gain is hard because it's hard to lose weight on with PCOS, and it's just a really difficult thing to deal with.
It certainly sounds it. I have to take a break now. We'll come back and continue our conversation on PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome. You just heard from Randa Herman. She is a patient of Dr. Valerie Ratz, who is with me in studio, along with her colleague, Dr. Emily Jungheim from Washington University School of Medicine. We'll come back, continue our conversation. If you'd like to get into the discussion, we would certainly welcome that at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you would prefer to send a tweet, we'll take that as well. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our discussion about polycystic ovarian syndrome. With me in studio, Dr. Valerie Ratz and Dr. Emily Jungheim of Washington University's School of Medicine. Joining us by phone from Marion, Illinois, is Randa Herman. She is a patient of Dr. Ratz. She has PCOS. Let me come back to you, Dr. Ratz, following our discussion with Randa, who is still with us. How are you treating her?
So Randa has decided that she'd like to consider conceiving, and so there are a variety of medical therapies that we can use. We always start off with this, trying to be as healthy as we can possibly be when we think about getting pregnant. So we've talked about diet, nutrition, exercise, and those are important things when you first start to treat PCOS in any manner. There are medications that we can use. We typically start out with medications that come by pill or oral form. Those medications include letrozole or clomiphene citrate. I would say that those work in about 30 to 40% of patients. Sometimes we have to go on and do injectable medications, shots for patients. And then sometimes we actually have to go on and do in vitro fertilization or IVF in order to help people with PCOS conceive. So it runs the gamut from very simple therapies, which most of the time work, to therapies that are much more complex.
Is it ever possible to totally arrest this disease?
So my thought on that is that this disease does have a component that is lifestyle related in terms of weight and in diet related. So trying to be the best weight that we can be in terms of if people are overweight or obese, bringing the weight into a more normal range can often ameliorate some of the symptoms that are there. But I think it's an underlying process that can be unmasked in a variety of different ways. And maybe, Emily, you might want to comment on that a little bit more, too. Your research is in that field.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly more than just the body weight. So oftentimes women can maximize healthy lifestyle to try to manage some of the symptoms. But as Valerie said, there's still some component at which lifestyle is not going to manage that. And, you know, we're really trying to do more research to figure out what it is that needs to be done above and beyond that to figure out why this happens and how we might be able to wipe it out.
When we talk about weight gain, are we talking about more than just belly fat, as has been mentioned? Are we talking about significant weight gain?
It really depends on how much the person weighs. The data would demonstrate that if somebody's just overweight, if we're going by body mass index, which is kilograms divided by meter squared, anybody who's just overweight, oftentimes if they lose 5 to 10% of their body weight, they may start to ovulate. But we know women who are morbidly obese, women with a BMI or body mass index of 40 kilograms per meter squared or greater, which is increasingly more common these days, those women often have to lose a much more significant amount of their body weight, sometimes up to 40% of their body weight. So, I mean, that it can be really difficult to achieve sure. clinically meaningful weight loss for folks like that.
Randa, how is this therapy working for you?
The weight loss?
All of it. A lot of things have been mentioned. What sort of treatment are you receiving? All of the things that Dr. Ratz was talking about, or just some of them?
Well, she did tell me that a lifestyle change was important. So I did do that at the very beginning. I did lose 33 pounds, but
great.
It was very difficult.
Yes.
And but then she had started me on Clomid and another medicine we're just trying now, but it looks like IVF is where we're going to have to be. I think I lost 10%, but my body is just stubborn, I guess.
Sometimes it just doesn't work, and so we have to go mm-hmm. move on to other therapies, and that's not
right.
uncommon. We tried the simple things first, and that's really important, not to get frustrated, right? I think that's a very important thing that some patients will have at this point in their therapy, is it can be frustrating, and maybe you can comment on that.
It is very frustrating. It's hard to explain to your spouse or other people, you know, what you're going through. And I think it's hard as a woman to go through infertility. And it's very difficult to explain to people what exactly is going on, because it's hard to explain without having your doctor right there telling them what's happening with your body. So, you know, just losing the weight and trying everything possible to have a baby is basically where we're at. Trying to move forward.
Mm-hmm. So, Randy, I think that the key thing is that you've tried the simple things, and we have a plan as we move forward here. And I think IVF is many times where you need to go with treatment of PCOS and has a very high pregnancy rate associated with it. So we're working our way through things.
That is certainly good news with all of what we've been talking about, the fact that there is this this potential.
Mm-hmm, right.
That is what changes with age, Dr. Jungheim? As women
sure.
get older, does this change at all?
Oh, absolutely. So the way I like to think about it, when we're young, oftentimes we can tolerate different bullets in our diet, lifestyle, and things like that. And as we get older, those things become much more difficult to tolerate. So a lot of the symptoms of PCOS, those are kind of accelerated in PCOS. So metabolic bullets, you know, bad diet, exercise, et cetera, can harm us more. And as we get older with PCOS, we're at risk for diabetes and cardiovascular disease at much younger ages. During pregnancy, we're at higher risk for gestational diabetes and preeclampsia. So those are things that change as we get older and progress more rapidly than they do in women who don't have this issue.
What about beyond childbearing age? What is going on then? I mean, do some of these things that we've talked about, the overweight, the hair growth, does that stop?
No. I mean, and oftentimes it just gets worse. A lot of these women, you know, if you don't make a big change early on in life, it can get worse, or at least try to curtail some of the metabolic symptoms they're experiencing. So a lot of those diseases of chronic diseases of old age just hit us sooner with PCOS. So again, the metabolic complications that we experience as we get older just come sooner with PCOS.
Randa, are you prepared to have to deal with all of this? That's your future.
It doesn't sound like a very good thing to go through, but I think that having PCOS now, I can start to change things to make it not as harsh when I'm older, and start to try and reverse as much as possible. I mean, we can't make it go away, but like she said, I mean, if you make the lifestyle change, hopefully it can make things better, and when I get older, I'll have a good grip on how to change things and adjust my life to PCOS.
And that, just to make a point about that, Randa, we are going to start a clinic at WashU for women who aren't necessarily in the childbearing process, but want to manage and curtail their symptoms of PCOS to prevent these long-term complications. We'll be starting that in the fall, and you know, look forward to helping women who are who are struggling with PCOS beyond the fertility piece.
We'll put information about that clinic on our website.
Great.
We'll have that information there. Randa has a great attitude. I think
Absolutely.
That's a big, big plus in all of this.
She's educated. She's educated about her disease process, which I think is very important.
Let's take a couple of calls. We have some people who want to get into the discussion. We'll start with Pam calling from St. Louis. Pam, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I was curious because I've seen evidence of ovarian issues in my family, but we also have a lot of people that have fibroids. And I was curious about the relationships between those. There have been issues with conceiving on both sides. That's
it. So usually PCOS and fibroids are two separate disease processes, but both of them are fairly common. So it's not uncommon to have both of those be a problem because both of them are fairly common problems. And that's how I would consider that. Emily, do you have any?
Yeah, and both can be associated with abnormal bleeding patterns and heavy bleeding.
Thank you for your call. Let's take another one. Emily will join us from St. Louis. Go ahead, Emily.
Hi. I'm calling because I was diagnosed with this about 3 years ago. And when I was diagnosed, my doctor said you have zero physical. I had no symptoms of it externally. Internally, yes, I had heavy bleeding, but I'm not overweight. I have no acne. I have no extra hair growth. And my doctor has figured out it because of my thyroid disease. And I think it's important to let people know that it is connected to your endocrine system, which is your thyroid. So I was just wanting to say that.
So I think that's a very good point. Whenever a patient comes in to see us with symptoms that look like PCOS, you have to consider other types of endocrine diseases that can mimic PCOS. So we always check the thyroid. We check a hormone called prolactin. We'll check the adrenal gland. So PCOS is typically something that we make the diagnosis by exclusion. We have to make sure we rule out all the other problems that it could look like. Good point.
Thank you so much for the call. Dr. Jungheim, what about the position we're in today in research? You're opening, doing clinical studies starting in the fall. Where are we right now in all of this?
In the global body of research on polycystic ovary syndrome, there's still a lot of debate about how to make the diagnosis. We've been talking about how it's such a heterogeneous condition. And really, we need to all be on the same page so we can do the research and include patients that are easy to be studied and classified. So that's one piece of it. Another piece is figuring out what causes it. Is there some genetic link that can be determined? Oftentimes, you'll see it run in families. You'll see male siblings of women with PCOS who have metabolic abnormalities as well. So determining what causes it. And then prevention is a huge piece of it. So Randa had talked about difficulty with weight loss. It may be that women with PCOS, need to lose weight differently. It might not be that a diet that works for her friend that doesn't have PCOS will work for her. So Valerie had mentioned insulin resistance as being a big piece of this. As we learn more about nutrition and how we may be able to optimize nutrition specifically for women with PCOS and insulin resistance, we're hoping to design better lifestyle interventions for these women. And there's a lot of research we're hoping to engage in our polycystic ovary syndrome on that piece, too.
How does it present in male siblings?
Well, what you'll see is signs of metabolic syndrome. So early signs of diabetes, glucose intolerance, high blood pressure, different metabolic abnormalities. So I had mentioned earlier the diseases of old age or chronic diseases of old age. We think about cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure, et cetera. A lot of male siblings of women with PCOS will develop those types of things earlier than men who don't have that in their family.
Right. Our time is getting away from us. Is there anything, Dr. Ratz, that you would like to add to this conversation before we have to say goodbye?
No, I think that it's key that knowledge of this disease process is incredibly important to know. And there are many therapies, and I think it's important to talk to your OBGYN about symptoms and get the right information, and there are many treatment available to our patients.
Well, Randa Herman, we want to thank you so much for being with us, and congratulations to you for the way you're handling this. Obviously, it's a tough situation to be in, but everyone here agrees that you're going about it the right way.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I love talking about it and helping other women.
Good, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Dr. Jungheim, anything you want to add before we say goodbye?
No, I just appreciate this opportunity to talk about this this condition.
Well, great to have you. Thank you very much, Drs. Valerie Ratz and Emily Jungheim, also Randa Herman.